Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back. Episode number 179 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, great to be chatting again, as always.
Yeah, good to be here, Jason.
Man, another interesting week. I think the next week is going to be really intriguing. They're calling the week of July 14th to 18th the crypto week, at least by the House Republicans, since they're going to be talking about three very high-profile crypto bills. They all have floor votes scheduled, two of which we've been talking about, the Genius and the Clarity Act. The third one is the Anti-CBDC Surveillance Act, which I think passed back in April on the House Financial Services Committee, 27-22 vote, which isn't very much. But to me, that's like one of the biggest no-brainers. We haven't talked much about it, but it's don't let the Fed go out and use CBDCs for privacy and to collect data on all of us, which we've been saying we don't want that forever.
Yeah, no thanks. You know, when it comes to this, I think that now that we're getting some clarity and some legislation passed, and I think that that's enough to really kind of start to help innovators, people start businesses and that sort of thing, get off the ground. Passing this stuff, and if they could do it this year, to me, that's just like the go, no-go decision for these companies to get started. So if we can do that, we can get away from CBDCs, like basically, you know, just the white hat version of crypto would be great.
Yeah. And I know Cynthia Lummis was trying to get what she's calling the digital asset tax legislation piece. And she tried to get into the big, beautiful bill, which was not one of the 1,000 pieces of pages that I guess was that made it. But what's cool about it is it's kind of what we've been talking about, right? Spending $300 per transaction and having to pay zero capital gains. I know Ohio did this a couple weeks ago with up to a couple $100. I think you're capped at about $5,000 a year total with all those transactions. And while $300 per transaction and $5,000 total per year isn't a ton, it's at least a starting point. And it would be nice to have something. And I think it's going to be inflation adjusted starting in 2026. And it goes back to the deferring the taxes on mining and staking, which we've been talking about. But man, I just hope that it starts to go up and to really increase the usage of Bitcoin for all types of different use cases across the board.
I'm all for this. Like $3,000 or $300 of transactions, a little low, but it's not crazy. I can still buy dinners that are under $300. So, you know, for now, that's all right, as long as they index it to inflation. $5,000 a year seems reasonable. You know, other than that, you might, you know, you could, it's easy to argue that you're using this as more of an investment and not as kind of a currency exchange sort of deal. So is it perfect? I mean, how could it be? I don't even know what I think would be ideal, but it's something better. I mean, it's something that's similar to what I would think would be, you know, what I would try to push if it were just me. So I think it could have a chance of passing, and capping it on the per year is the way to go. So that way, when you have people, detractors saying, oh, you're just going to have, you know, I mean, it's crypto. If I wanted to spend $1,000,000, I could spend it in $299.99 transactions in a second. So, you know, I'm not a programmer, but I'm pretty sure me and AI could get together and come up with an app that allows you to do that. So capping it on the per year makes sense. That's not a bad framework. Cynthia Lummis is not bad. She's pretty good at this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, $300 and $5,000 cap is a little low. I think in a perfect world, if we got to the $500 or $600 max and maybe like $25,000 a year, I'd be super happy, right? So we're not far off, but this is a good start for sure.
Yeah. And that, you know, $600 is the number that's in my head, because anything under $600 in my world, in my account, it doesn't require me to do it because it's considered de minimis. But that $600 is like from the 70s that it was put into the tax code. Yeah. But it hasn't been indexed to inflation. So it's like equal to like $10,000. It's supposed to be considered de minimis for tax purposes, but it's stuck at 600. So, you know, I would love for them to get away from taxes, but I don't think it works. So we live in the world we live in. Give me $600, $300, whatever. And just give me something. Just let me go to Steak and Shake and not consider it to be a taxable event.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, it's a starting point. So let's go from there. So speaking of a starting point, we talked last week about Circle applying for a U.S. banking license. Well, 2 days later, Ripple did the same thing. They're trying to get a national bank charter. They've also applied for a master account with the Federal Reserve, which would really give them the ability to really custody assets directly with the Fed, which they could almost bypass all the corresponding banking layers and enable near instant settlement at the central bank level. There's zero native crypto companies that have achieved this to date, so don't expect this to happen. Custodia Bank had been trying to do that. They got refused by the KC Fed. They sued them and still lost. I think they're still appealing, but I don't think these banks want these crypto native companies to have any sort of access to that master account side of things.
No, when you were talking about this, I'm like, man, if they do this, Custodia Bank is going to just erupt. And social media wise, like, what's the woman's name that is like the spearheading Custodia Bank? Oh, I think her last name is Long, Cynthia Long or something. I don't know. Anyway, she would crush social media if Ripple gets a master account before Custodia Bank does.
Yeah, no, for sure. And what's interesting is they're not the only ones going after it. Fidelity's crypto-focused subsidiary, which is called Fidelity Digital Assets, has also filed for one. So I'll be intrigued to see if they do it. And then on top of that, Erebor, which if you're familiar with Lord of the Rings, that's one of the mountains there. There's a company being created by Palmer Luckey, who is the CEO of Anduril, also the creator of the Meta VR that sold to, or Oculus VR that sold to Meta. Yeah. They have filed for a national bank charter with the Office of the Comptroller for the Currency. Peter Thiel is also, I think, helping him with this too. They're trying to replace Silicon Valley Bank, right? And all those sectors like crypto, AI, defense, and others that were really barred from working with traditional financial institutions in the past. So Peter and Palmer seem to have this Lord of the Rings thing going on where they're naming a lot of their companies similar to Lord of the Rings, of Palantir and Anduril, and now Erebor. So kind of interesting to see how that's going to play out too.
Yeah, I mean, the crypto stuff's nerdy enough. I don't know that you really need to pile on name stuff after Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or other nerdy shit. So, no, I'll keep an eye on it. It's interesting. I mean, Palmer Luckey, I listened to him talk, and, like, he's a smart guy. He's got, you know, he's eccentric and all that, but I just get a feeling like he's ready for the next thing. I mean, I looked into, or I don't remember if I was told the story of, like, he basically just said, why isn't VR better? And then he just decided to make it better. You know what I mean? Like, he just took it on himself to make a better VR, because, you know, I mean, the same as me and you, when Nintendo came out with virtual reality in the late 80s or early 90s, and it just never got better from that. And so a guy that just, like, looks at a problem that nobody else can solve and then decides to solve it, and now, by the way, he's got a ton of money behind him and he can do it again. It'll be curious to watch and see what he does next.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've listened to his story. I mean, he did that in high school, and right, I was up against companies that were investing a ton of money to do this, and then Meta paid him a crap ton of money and then fired him. So he went and reinvented the whole aerospace and defense sector. That's been fascinating to watch. I think it's gone from, what, $1 billion valuation 6 years ago to $30 billion today. And now he's kind of going after the financial space. And I'll be very intrigued to see what he does there too. I mean, he's kind of one of these guys that has fallen in the footsteps of like Elon Musk and is trying to think differently about a lot of different things. And it seems to be working.
Yeah, no, it's kind of people like that you got to pay attention to.
Yeah. So speaking of stable coins, we kind of talked a little bit about that. I did see the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, came out and said that stablecoin legislation puts Americans at risk, and she thinks the Federal Reserve Board should oversee non-bank stablecoin issuers. And to me, I was like, holy cow, she is getting funded by the banks. Why would you put just the banks in charge of all stablecoins when all they've done is screw things up in the past? And you think they're not going to screw things up again in the future?
Yeah, I you know, there's so many people that are just, you know, in the goldfish bowl and have no idea. And I feel like the more I put attorneys seem to be the last people that want to try to understand crypto and Bitcoin. Like, even finance people, there's more finance people that are understanding Bitcoin and crypto than attorneys, man. And so these folks getting to, I guess maybe because they're like, they're only looking for problems. You know, attorneys don't get paid for solving stuff. They get paid for extending the problems as long as possible. And crypto is just a solution. Bitcoin's a solution. And so I think that really holds them back. And so you grease the wheels of an attorney general with some cash to say, hey, we don't want to let stablecoins run wild. And look at all the bad things that could happen. Look at, you know, I don't know how many attorney friends you have, but it's like just having a conversation with them. They crank up the worst case scenarios a lot. So it's super annoying. And when they're the attorney general of New York, I feel like that's what we're getting here.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy too, where you had one guy in New York that wanted crypto to come to New York and be this center of the world for crypto. And then the rest of New York is fighting as hard as possible to try to kill crypto almost, right? It's just a wild dynamic going on in New York right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm Mayor of New York, Eric Adams. I don't know what I think about that guy. He seems to have a different opinion every time I hear him talk.
Yeah, not that I would want to put my faith behind him, but it's just interesting what he's pushing versus the rest of New York. They don't seem
to be. Yeah, he is the only one.
Yeah. And it, being the only one, now we talk about Arizona. Their governor vetoed another bill to create a reserve fund from seized crypto. It got passed last week by the House 34-22, but this is something that, yeah, apparently she wants nothing to do with, which is kind of crazy. This is now two bills that she's vetoed relating to Bitcoin reserves. So it's kind of wild.
Yeah. And, you know, like Connecticut and Arizona, you know, being very anti-crypto. I'm like, you can also just not, you know, pass this and say, yep, okay, you got seized assets and you want to turn them. It's basically what the U.S. government did. You have seized assets. You can hold them. That's all. You could just say that's. It's not saying there's no active go out and seek and find stuff. These bills I think are dumb. The ones where it's if she vetoes a strategic Bitcoin reserve where you're taking taxpayer dollars or, you know, reallocating funds or things like that, man, that's super easy for me to see somebody take it down. But it's like, if there's a drug cartel's taken down and crypto's captured, why wouldn't they put that into an account? It doesn't make sense. Right?
It doesn't cost you anything.
And it's just, we'll see what happens and if they pay a political price for this, and then we'll see what other states do.
Yeah. So some other things on politics that were kind of interesting. Speaking of, I guess, kind of politics, Supreme Court decided to decline to relook at a case that might have re-examined the obligation of crypto exchanges to comply with government requests for user data. So this is something that back in 2016, Coinbase had the IRS come to them and say, we want info on 14,000 of your customers. What, there was one of the guys there that kind of sued them and said, this is a violation of my Fourth Amendment, which is unreasonable searches and seizures by the government. And Coinbase has kind of jumped behind this, and they thought this would kind of be, this whole thing would be reevaluate whether or not crypto data was covered under the Fourth Amendment. But the Supreme Court has said, we're not even going to look at it. So it's kind of disappointing. I'm not sure if Coinbase is going to appeal or if this other guy is going to appeal, but hopefully this does get looked at some point again.
Yeah, I'm surprised, whatever. I don't know enough about the case, but that's something that the Supreme Court should start thinking about, is property rights and how it applies and how crypto and Bitcoin digital assets fit into like a traditional constitutional rights and things like that.
I'm like, what are they focusing their time on? This isn't one of those, because this seems, I mean, it's just important for me, but this seems to be something that will be a big deal moving forward for sure.
Yeah, and they could go ahead and get in front of something, but that's, again, attorneys.
So last week we talked about Robinhood, that they were going to deploy a bunch of stock contracts. Well, they ended up doing that on Arbitrum. It cost them $5 to deploy 213 different tokenized stock contracts. The caveat that everybody is, I think, frustrated with is they kind of think this is a walled garden and that you have to work inside the Robinhood space and you can't just transfer it to a self-custodial wallet. So we'll kind of see what happens there. They had also promised that some of this, these stock contracts was going to be like OpenAI, which OpenAI is not a tradable stock right now. So OpenAI had come out and said that this tokenized OpenAI is not their equity stock. And I think Robinhood responded and said, it's not exactly the equity stock, but you can go look at our PNCs and see exactly what it is and it should be equivalent. So not really sure what's going to happen here. I mean, granted, it's EU only for a little while, but I'm kind of intrigued to see what does happen with Robinhood and where this goes from here.
I would be curious to see it too. And even if like phase one Robinhood comes out, I'm not a Robinhood fan at all, but if they come out and it is only interchangeable within the Robinhood ecosystem, cool. But if it's on Arbitrum or if it's on a blockchain, that's phase one, right? Phase two could be like, yep, okay, now you can take it to somebody else. But right now there wouldn't be anybody else to take it to anyway. So I don't know that, like, I mean, I feel like you're not using the most advantageous piece of tokenizing the securities if you have to keep it on the same security. Then you might as well just be on Schwab or Robinhood. So yeah, it's worth keeping an eye on. I think they're barking up the right tree.
Yeah, so what's interesting is XStocks just got launched on Solana, which both Kraken and Bybit are planning to use the XStocks product versus building their own tokenized platform. So I think I was looking at some of it and some guy was like, oh, I can trade Fartcoin for any US equity 24/7 on a decentralized protocol right now, which is kind of what we're expecting in the future. But yeah, so Robinhood is doing something. XStocks is pretty much already there. I don't know who's allowed to do it yet, which is, I haven't really been able to get a ton of detail on it, but apparently it is live now.
Yeah, I think that that's neat. I don't know that I will be doing it, but I mean, honestly, I use Schwab. I mean, Schwab tells me that I own whatever shares of whatever I own, but they're effectively IOUs. So, you know, why not tokenize the IOUs? That's to me, That's what this is.
Yeah, no, for sure. Quick break from the podcast to plug something I created. I've had the same conversation with a lot of people that were very curious about crypto. So if you are one of those ones that are curious about crypto, you want to know why it's growing, what it can do, how you can get involved, how you can protect yourself doing that, then this is for you. It's 43 plus videos that you can self-pace and you get access for forever. You get a 365-day money-back guarantee if you don't like it. The link is in the show notes or go to www.jasonexplainscrypto.com/curious. Back to the podcast. So last week you also talked about Bitmine and Tom Lee being named to their board. Holy cow, did they have an interesting ride with their stock price. I think right beforehand they had about a $250 million private placement at about $4.50 a share, $4.50. So last week, I think on Monday, it opened at like $6. It closed over $135 and less than a week later on Thursday, trading was halted twice because it was jumping so much. And this is a company that is basing on raising money to do an Ethereum treasury company, and Sharpwing Gaming had done that not too long ago. When they did this, came out, their stock cratered 70%. So apparently with Tom Lee on the board, there is a lot of excitement for Bitmine and where it's going to go moving forward.
Yeah, that's wild, man. And you know, every time one of these like Bitcoin strategic companies or the Bitmine announcement stuff, I kind of take a peek and look at, and I swear you can't pick the ones that are going to go up or the ones that aren't, the ones that stay flat. It's like, why is Metaplanet doing what it's doing and Similar Scientific can't move? Like, how would you forecast that? You know, it's like impossible. So, yeah, you know, put that on the list. Like I would not expect Bitmine to go nuts and, you know, any other Ethereum, you know, company, reserve company, everybody else just goes flat. So good luck.
So there's another NASDAQ listed company, AdInTax, which is actually Chinese based. They just came out and said they plan to buy 12,000 Bitcoin, which they said they were going to buy 8,000 in May. So that 12,000 is going to be worth about $1.3 billion right now. What's crazy is this stock has traded under a dollar for over a year. I think it's kind of this last-ditch effort to, let's turn into a Bitcoin treasury company to try to save whatever this company is doing in the meantime.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to play defense and you don't want people shorting your stock, convert your treasury into Bitcoin. And if they short your stock, they're effectively shorting Bitcoin. And I don't think a lot of people want to do that. So there is a game to be played there.
Yeah, I don't think anybody has any idea where they're going to get this $1.3 billion to buy the Bitcoin either. So it is very vague. It's interesting that it's listed on NASDAQ. So it has to share some information about all this stuff. It can't just do it all under the radar. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I look forward to it.
So speaking of crypto treasury companies, Nano Labs, which is a Chinese chip designer, they just added $50 million in BNB to a crypto treasury. Their goal is to be kind of the king of the BNB treasury space. They have, I think, 160 million already. They want to get to 10% of BNB supply, which the total supply right now that I looked at, their market cap was 92 billion. So they want to get to $9.2 billion and they're at 160 million. They got a long ways to go. They did just announce the first purchase program using convertible notes for about 500 million, but that's a long ways away from 10% of BNB.
Man, but not only that, I know that CZ is not supposed to be involved in the operations of Binance and all this other stuff, but man, I don't think I want to put my, I don't think he's a bad actor, or at least not a totally bad actor, but I wouldn't want my corporates going forward concern to be wrapped up into Binance.
Yeah. Well, they're a Chinese-based company. They prefer probably BNB over some other things, since it's also Chinese-based-ish.
Yeah.
Right. But, oh well, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
It's always interesting.
So last week, we also talked about one of the big banks in Germany getting involved in crypto, Deutsche Bank. They are set to launch a crypto custody service in 2026. And they're going to use Bitpanda for custody. So that's another German company jumping into it. Germany's getting involved. They haven't looked like they wanted to get involved for a while. And now they're changing their minds.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the best way to learn that you should have got into Bitcoin is to not get into it and then pay the price.
And then I also saw, I mean, we were talking about all the stablecoin stuff in the U.S., but some of the Chinese tech giants, so JD and Ant Group, have been lobbying the Chinese central bank to approve offshore yuan-based stablecoins. And I mean, this is really due to what's going on in the U.S. with this stablecoin race heating up. So I'll be intrigued to see if China kind of jumps into that space, and there's a lot of tech companies that want that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess it's the time in the bull run where China's active and not banning stuff yet.
Well, I got some more stuff about China later on, but we're gonna stick to something else for now. We talked last week about IMF and Pakistan. Had some more news come out after months of back and forth between Pakistan and the IMF over some plans to boost some industrial consumption of some surplus electricity, particularly in crypto mining. IMF had says no. They said Pakistan's crypto mining ambitions may bring economic gains, but must not come at the cost of destabilizing already stressed infrastructure. I'm reading that, I'm like, they just don't want them to have a chance to be able to repay any of the money they owe so that they can control all of their assets at some point when they can't make the payments to the IMF, which is, it's just wild, right? So I think Pakistan's still working with World Bank and other people as well to try to find a way to make this happen, because they seem to be really big into, what, 2 months ago they announced they were going to have a Bitcoin strategic reserve, and CZ is one of their advisors. So there's a lot going on. It's just the IMF is definitely making this difficult on them.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the Small Business Administration gives you a loan and says, don't grow your business. Like, they would rather, like, IMF would rather you default so that you can refinance your debt and get more indebted to them. It's pretty brutal.
Yeah. And then it's been a while since we've talked about a solo miner winning a Bitcoin, but that apparently just happened the other day. Won just over the mining reward of 3.125. I think it was worth about $350,000, which it says he has 2.3 petahashes of mining power, which, man, if you look at trying to mine Bitcoin, 2.3 petahashes is not a single miner. That's somebody that has a handful of miners. So they might be a solo miner, yes, but they got to have, what, at least 7 or 8 miners?
Yeah, they're pretty serious. They might be one guy that's not in a pool of miners, but it's a pretty serious setup.
Yeah, I mean, it's still like 0.0003% of the total mining, right? So the chances of him winning is crazy small, and good for him. But I mean, 2.3 petahashes is not just this, oh yeah, I bought a miner and I have it sitting in my house. This is a serious thing going on. That's a lot of power.
Yeah, that's a lot of money to spend on power, hoping you get one block reward and not hooking up to a pool and getting paid, you know, a fraction of what you're contributing to the mining pool. Like, yeah, that's a lot of guts.
Hey, it worked out though, apparently.
It works.
Not the first one, probably will definitely not be the last, that's for sure.
No, it's just the numbers say that it'll happen more often, or it'll still happen. But yeah, I mean, it sucks for him that the mempool is so quiet that the reward is basically just the block reward. The transaction rewards are super low right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That still, 350K is not a bad reward, that's for sure.
Yeah, it pays off.
So there's also some crazy movements in Bitcoin the other day. About 80,000 Bitcoin that hasn't moved in over 10 years was moved. It's the biggest single day movement of Bitcoin ever. It pretty much destroyed over 1.1 million coin years in less than 24 hours. What's crazy about all this? The markets really didn't move. Cathie Wood kind of came out and said she thought it was a government settlement deal. Maybe it's part of now a government treasury. Some people thought it might be Roger Ver. So who knows what it is, but it's amazing that you have, what, $8 billion of Bitcoin that moves in 8 different transactions to 8 different wallets, and the Bitcoin price didn't even move.
Oh, yeah. I think if you were in Bitcoin 3-4 years ago and longer, when old stuff moved, everybody would freak out and sell. The price would tank. And it was really just like, oh, look at this. This is happening. I wonder who this is. And I think the most bullish way to think of it is that the U.S. government paid somebody like, hey, we know that you're sitting on a ton of Bitcoin. We'd like to buy 10,000 at a time, and we'll pay you. You know, we don't need to go through an exchange and start seeding that strategic fund. Yeah. So that would be that's a fun way to think about it. But who knows what this is? It could just be people moving stuff from old wallets to newer wallets, and it's just time to move. But we'll see.
It'd be awesome if we start to get announcements from the Trump administration that they've seeded the Bitcoin strategic reserve with 80,000 Bitcoin. That would be cool to hear.
Oh, it would. It would erupt. I'm very American and I'm very pro-America. And like, the countries are going to get into Bitcoin. It's going to happen. America getting in first would be ideal.
Yeah. So that 80,000 Bitcoin that was just moved, if you think about it from a bigger picture, and Matt from Hogan from Bitwise was doing a little kind of update on his predictions for 2025. He said Bitcoin in the first half of 25 produced about 80,000 Bitcoin, right? So in 6 months, 80,000 Bitcoin were mined. The ETFs and the corporations gobbled up over 300,000 Bitcoin in that same period. So, which is mind-boggling. You're talking about almost 4x as much that was mined was gobbled up. Right now, the ETFs the Bitcoin ETFs have only kind of had $13 billion of inflows so far this year. Last year's total was about $35 billion. So we're halfway through and only about a third of the way from last year. So his expectation is that there's still some time for it to pick up in the second half of the year. When you look at like Wells Fargo, they just kind of approved about 3 months ago for their agents to be able to sell Bitcoin ETFs. So that could help push some things along. But if that's the case, then you're going to see, what, $25 billion of inflows in the next 6 months. that's going to be really intriguing to see what happens with the Bitcoin price at the same time.
And that's just the ETFs.
Yeah.
These crypto or these Bitcoin reserve corporations are going to be eating up some kind of similar number. And man, you know, Bitcoin's been the scarcity message has been sent the whole time I've been in Bitcoin, and it's never actually been scarce. There's never been a problem acquiring Bitcoin. If there is, what happens to the price is crazy. So yeah, you know, it's kind of like the U.S. Strategic Reserve. I'm like, bring it on. I'm ready. I no longer like, oh man, we got to get more time for some people to get in. I was like, man, you know about Bitcoin. You should be invited.
So I saw FTX was still in the news. I don't know if you saw this, but they announced they're looking to freeze payout to 49 countries that have restrictive crypto regulations. This is kind of where China comes back into this. That's about 5% of the total amount of money. But of that 5%, 82% of that is to China. So this is, and we're talking about China, which pretty much said crypto is illegal. Although the Chinese were saying, well, they can receive wire transfers in US dollars to outside of China addresses. So they want to get this wire transfers sent to random places outside of China to make up for their losses in FTX.
Yeah, China just plays games, man. Like, they used to yank the Bitcoin market around, and they've got to realize that those days are over, and that means something. So I guess they don't really care too much about if their people can hold wealth. You know, they do a lot of restrictive things to make sure that their people can't, like, bring money out of the country. So it's just strange, man. They should be able to just turn on Bitcoin, turn on crypto, have some reasonable rules. And I mean, it seems like people in China just follow the rules for the most part. So just set the rules and like quit yanking everybody around.
Yeah. And then an interesting thing that I saw too, we've been talking about hacks and in crypto. What we haven't really talked about was hacks in regular banking facilities. So there was a 48-year-old IT operator that was bribed about $2,800 that allowed hackers to gain entry to the central bank reserves for at least six Brazilian financial institutions. That resulted in a theft estimated about $148 million. Zach XBT, which is one of the sleuth guys for crypto, says somewhere between 30 and 40 million of that was converted to crypto. So it's not just crypto that's the problem. It's still the financial banks that have a lot of issues here too. So I'll be intrigued to see if they can recover any of that. I think there was some of that was recovered already, but it's not all of it by any means.
Yeah, it's like the same story, man. Like, well, crypto is nefarious use and all those other things. Like, yeah, man, so is the dollar. Phone. So, you know, it's like, you know, oh, you could get hacked and lose your money. It's like, yeah, okay. That happens no matter what. And oh man, quantum computing crack, like, yeah, it's gonna crack everything. Like, people isolate Bitcoin and crypto when these problems, and it's like, well, everything has problems, so you get to choose your problems.
So sticking in Latin America and transferring to the RWA space, Mercado Bitcoin, which is one of the largest crypto platforms in Latin America, they have announced they have plans to tokenize about $200 million in RWAs on the XRP ledger, which probably most people haven't really thought about doing that. If you look at Ethereum still leads the RWA space with about $7.5 billion in tokenizations. XRP ledger is probably in like 10th place right now with about 157 million. So this would more than double the amount of money that they have tokenized today. So it's interesting they're choosing XRP. I know there's a lot of people excited about XRP and what's going to happen. I'm still wondering what is going to happen and how they are going to be successful, but I guess time will tell.
Yeah, I mean, like XRP just like never goes away. So, I mean, maybe they'll put real world assets on it and maybe they won't. I don't know. That seems to be one of those things, like, just wait and see which horse is going to win that race.
Well, I mean, they created their own stablecoin now. So I'm trying to understand why they need a stablecoin when they had XRP and why have both at this point. But I don't know. I guess, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. That's fine. I'm not going to talk bad about XRP. I don't know enough about it, but it just, yeah. It's never made very much sense to me. So I'll just let that one roll.
Yeah, maybe I'll learn more one of these days. So other RWA companies that we've heard about before, Ondo Finance, they are, I guess, just agreed to acquire Oasis Pro, which is a deal that really grants that startup a full suite of U.S. securities licenses and clears a path for them to serve American investors with tokenized stocks and bonds. So that's exciting to see. I know we talked about Robinhood and XStock doing that already. So Ondo now will be able to do this in the U.S. and maybe we'll start to see a lot more of that. I mean, we've seen Ondo and BlackRock kind of partner with a few things in the past, and Ondo is definitely one of the leaders, at least in the U.S. So I'm kind of excited to see where this goes and what this turns into.
Cool. I will look forward to weekly updates from you. I don't think I'm going to be able to add too much on that one.
And then the last thing I had, we've talked about Fold quite a bit in the past. So Thesis is the company that Fold kind of got incubated at, right? They were spun out of Thesis and then did a SPAC with another company to go public. Well, Thesis just acquired Lolly. And if you're not familiar with Lolly, they are a Bitcoin rewards platform that pretty much they will give you Bitcoin for linking them, kind of like a shopping portal that you've seen with some credit cards and things like that too. So you just get your rewards back in Bitcoin rather than miles or points. So I'm kind of excited. The guy that runs Thesis is also sits on the board of Fold. I think he's supposed to be amping up Lolly, which I go on there every day and kind of use the little treasure chest to see how many Bitcoin they give me for free. So it is a cool little app. Hopefully they add some more to it. They've talked about doing some like gaming things that you can earn Bitcoin doing that. And they also apparently have like a stealth product for businesses as well that allows them to earn some rewards in Bitcoin for the business too. So yeah, I'm kind of excited to see where this goes. Fold had a little bit of a letdown with their credit card being delayed some. So at least now there's some other companies that are still investing in this space and trying to make it better.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a no-brainer thing to do. Like Bitcoin rewards or getting people to acquire Bitcoin without just straight, you know, investing, converting U.S. dollars into Bitcoin. That's kind of a leap for a lot of people. But you get to start a little chipping away and you start to, I mean, I was looking at Fold. So I had a Fold, the debit card, and I put some money on there, and then my son wants to use a debit card. So I'm like, all right, fine. Give me some money. I'll move my money out, put your money in. You can use the debit card. I had a friend of mine bought my lunch because I was running late for a lunch meeting. And so I paid him back in Bitcoin. And then I rebought my Bitcoin that day. And then I did it through Fold. And so that $20 lunch is worth $50 in Bitcoin right now. And so I'm like, man, I'm curious. What kind of rewards my son can accumulate while he's 12 and spending, you know, $100 here and $50 there. So I think it's a pretty smart way for people to kind of just dip their toe in without feeling like they're losing anything, right? I mean, if your credit card rewards get cut in half, you don't feel that.
Yeah, I would say Fold definitely has made it more difficult to get rewards from daily spending, unfortunately.
Right.
There's ways to do it, but for a young kid, he probably doesn't have a lot of ACH payments that he's making outside of the debit card. So you might want to figure out a way to leverage whatever he's spending to pay off part of your credit card and get some rewards that way, pay him back.
Yeah, I gotta look at like all the boosts and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, what'd I miss?
Oh, man. BlackRock's Bitcoin ETF now generates more revenue for BlackRock than their S&P 500 ETF. And I think it's the number three overall BlackRock ETF as far as money coming in. So if you're one of those guys that's like, oh, Bitcoin's going to zero, BlackRock probably doesn't want that to happen. And so just a heads up in general there that's kind of shocking. I mean, this thing came out 18 months ago, so Bitcoin's on the way up. I mean, it's been pretty awesome. I'm shocked that we're still at like this $105,000 to $110,000 range. But, you know, Bitcoin moves in kind of a big leaps and then it chills out and walks sideways for a while and then it steps forward. So, you know, we could be, I feel like we're on a coiled spring. I mean, I feel like we've been bouncing around between 90 and 110 for 8 months. And like, that's seems like enough time to build a little foundation where we could leg up to the next spot. So that's that one piece there on price. And the other thing, man, you know, these like crypto people or whatever, like stop looking at Bitcoin charts and go touch grass. Like, I'm in Montana right now. I went to Glacier National Park the last couple of days and it's awesome. So I concur. It's like, get outside, get away from charts. Like, it's pretty nice out here.
Yeah. I'm jealous. Definitely a cool place to be. I enjoy it, and I'll let you get back to enjoying your vacation, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jason.
See you.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below. And hope to see you there.